Please be advised that the bathrooms we usually use are out of order. Please use the bathrooms accessible to my left. Follow the signs. Hi, my name is Anastasia and I'm an alcoholic. This is an open meeting of the Atlantic Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we are all welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that may better carry the message of AA. And since the most important aspect of AA recovery is one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics participate. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would be also helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. Our leadership persons, Kareth and Gerard, have the list of such groups with their phone numbers. In any case, we hope that what we learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Peggy will read the preamble.
Hi, everybody. My name is Peggy, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety.
Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. James will read the steps.
Hello, I'm James. I'm an alcoholic. Okay. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over the care of God as we understood him. Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Step five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Step six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Step seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. And step eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Step nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Step 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we're wrong, promptly admitted it. And step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all affairs.
Philip will read the traditions.
Hi, my name is Philip. I'm an alcoholic. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is the desire to stop drinking. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6. An AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. AA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to praise principles before personalities.
Tonight is the anniversary night. The format of tonight's meeting will be a main speaker who will speak for 25 minutes, followed by our information break and the anniversary celebrants. Our main speaker tonight is Liz M.
Hi. It's close. Hi, I'm Liz. I'm an alcoholic. You guys look great. Let's see. I'm really grateful to be here. I got sober April 20th, 1996 in Pittsburgh. And yeah, it's good. And I was 20, so you guys can do the math. And it was like a month before my 21st birthday, actually. So I'm 35. I'll save your brain cells, I'll tell you. And that's unbelievable to me to stand here and say that. It's unbelievable for a lot of reasons. Just to have done one thing consistently for 14 years is not my doing. And to do one thing that's, you know, being sober for 14 years and doing a thing I never wanted to do, you know, until I hit bottom. I started drinking. I live in Brooklyn, and Midday is my home group on 7th Avenue. And let's see. Okay, so I started drinking when I was 12. Wine coolers with an older man, you know. And so that was the first escapade was I started off right. And then I went to a little eighth grade party, and I had a few wine coolers, and this memory is still vivid. I said, "Is there any beer here?" And like the grandparents were there, and the everyone kind of looked at me, and it's that classic, like, the record player like stops, and like, who is this sad child that's like asking for beer? And I remember someone in high school drove us home that night, and I kept asking her. I said, "Is there any way you can get us like vodka or something or anything?" Or so, and I never put that together until I came to the rooms that, you know, my first drunk, all I could think about was how great I felt and how I wanted to keep in, you know, getting more drunk, more. I went to an all-girls Catholic high school, and I mean, we were ridiculous. At least the girls that I hung around with, we were ridiculous. Having a fake ID was very important. And, you know, so there were dances, and we would always drink before the dances. And that was like the big thing. And lots of vomiting, and lots of drunk driving. And So I'll skip ahead. I went to college and I majored in acting, and I was terrified. I was so full of fear. And my teachers would say to me, you know, you have good instincts, but you're always doubting yourself. You know, you're really doubting yourself. And in acting classes, you are like, you're there. You know, it's not like you're sitting cranking out math problems, you know, or you're hiding behind your computer, your calculator. You know, you're like, you know, here I am, here's, you see, you know, they see the terror that is in someone like me. And when I was drunk, I felt great. So I would get really drunk on the weekends at parties, and I would even say that, you know, I started therapy because I was depressed and in college, and I said, when I'm drunk, I'm fine. You know, it's like, and I literally had I said to somebody, you know, if I had just alcohol like pumping in through my veins, I would be totally fearless and hilarious, and I could do all these things that they're asking me to do at school. So there was when I was drunk, I felt like that. When I wasn't, when I was showing up to class, the voices in my head were so loud that it got to the point where, you know, the teacher would ask for our feedback on something, and, you know, I'd get an idea, and call on me, and I would start to, you know, well, I think that, I just couldn't. Never mind. And sometimes I like run out the door. You know, I would try to. My head was so loud. You're such an idiot. You're so stupid. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You don't know anything. Why are you here? The only reason you're here is because your dad could pay the tuition. Da-da-da-da-da. You're not talented. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, and so I couldn't really have a clear thought when I was having all that other stuff going on. And I believed all those things. And you're worthless. Why are you alive? You're selfish. But then when I was drunk, and sometimes not when I was drunk, but if something good happened or I was, you know, feeling high for some reason, some rare reason, I would be at the opposite end of the spectrum. Don't these people know who I am? You know, I've been destined to be a rock star since I was like 10. You know, I literally said that to a guy once. I'm like, do you know who I am? Don't you know who I am? And when I was drunk. I mean, it's just... It's just sick. I mean, that kind of sums it up. But then the other end of that is I had such deep self-hate. And I've heard people say in here, you know, I'm not much, but I'm all I think about sometimes, you know. And it was that trap. So, you know, tons of escapades through college. I ended up in jail once. I got sober about 4 months after that. So that did help wake me up. I was in Florida. I tried to get a fake ID. All my friends had real fake IDs. Like, they were in, we lived in Ohio, and they went to Kentucky and got this real ID with their picture on it. I was like, so I was at a bar in Florida with all my friends, and how's my time? Okay. And the guy said, come back when you get a better ID, because I had some, like, 25-year-old girl's ID from Michigan with dark hair, and I had blonde hair, and I was, like, 18. And I was like, I will. I'll do that, mister. You know? So the next day, my friend, we were in Florida. I went to, we went to the license bureau. Then five people in front of me, they warned this woman, you know, it's a felony to try to get a fake, you know, fake identification in this country. You can go to jail for 5 years. I was like, oh my God, that's so awesome. He's got it out of his system. You know, he's not going to suspect me. You know, he dealt with her. He's not going to think someone else is going to do that again, you know, five people later in line. So I go up, you know, I pay for it. They take my picture. I'm just like so excited. It was just so important for me to be able to go where I wanted to go. I spent a lot of time running from bouncers. You know, there were certain bouncers in Cincinnati that I just had to hide from. You know, my friends had to kind of like hide me in the club. That was a very important part of my drinking, was the party and aren't I hilarious and look at my boa and my plastic clothes and all my glitter, you know, and look how I dance with my friends, you know. And that was my identity. You know, I thought, so anyway, in walk these, it's taking a really long time for me to get this ID that I paid for, and it's so in my fingertips. In walk these cops. I was like, you know what? Something feels weird. I stand up to go, and they seize me. Handcuffed me, ankle cuffed me, put me in a van, transported me into this other van and said, careful where you sit. People in there, you know. People, you know, do stuff. It's messy in there. And then I started to cry. I was like, oh my God, you know. But part of that time when I was in these cuffs, I thought, okay, I'm in this van and people, you know, people know I'm in here and this is a police van and how do I feel? You know, what do people think about me? And this is good for my acting, you know? I mean, I was still trying to justify it. And I said, no, you go to a really good school and you're, you know, you were brought up well and you have a privileged life and how could you be in this situation? I'm like, but no, this is really good. And then I realized when I got to jail, I was like, oh my God, your objective when you're in jail is you want out, you know? I was like, that's totally it. You want out. So that's a whole story. And I had, you know, that's like a whole, I was in jail for about 8 hours and I got out and then I was drunk the next night. So fast forward about, you know, that next April, I was crying every day. I had developed this, I thought I had some kind of parasite or bug or something. I was scratching, you know, and my skin was irritated. I was red. And I had been at a party, a few weeks before that, where I was dancing, went over on my ankle. I had these heels on. It went pop. And so my ankle was in this thing called the rocket sock, this brace. So I was on crutches in the rocket sock, and I'm scratching myself, you know, and I'm crying every day. At some point every day I cried. And I'd be in my car driving around Pittsburgh, and I'd look at people, you know, in the car next to me, and they'd be laughing with their friends, and you know, I would think, oh, I wish they would want me to be their friend, you know. Just this lonely, you know, just, and I was surrounded by people who would tell me really nice things about myself, you know, and really believed in me and said, you're a great person. And, you know, most of them were my party buddies, but a lot of them, you know, I still am friends with today. And, but I could not believe it. You know, I could believe it when I was wasted and felt like I looked spectacular in my, you know, plastic outfit, and I was getting ready to go work it on the town, you know, but I couldn't, there was nothing, there was a giant hole, you know, the giant hole that we talk about in my soul. So I was talking to my dad on the phone. My dad was sober. He passed away in 2006, but in 96, he said to me, you know, I was on the phone with him and saying all this stuff about how I feel about myself, and I'm no good at anything, and then he's like, you have self-centered thinking. He said, why don't you go to an AA meeting? And, you know, so much for attraction rather than promotion. But it worked for me, you know. He was like, go to an AA meeting. And I said, well, I don't qualify for that. You know, I'm not even 21, and I don't drink every day. And he's like, you've been to jail. Just tell him you've been to jail. And he's like, wah, 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 you know. And when I told my mom I'd been in jail, I called her the next day. She said, those bleep cops. She's a public defender in Ohio, and she was totally blaming the cops. And I used to drink with my mom, you know, so it was like, there's that whole psychology, you know, building the, you know, creating this person here. So I said, okay, I'll go to an AA meeting, because I was so desperate. And I'd been with my dad before, and I felt sorry for you guys. You know, I felt like, God, that is so sad. They can't drink. That is, what would I do? Oh, I can't think about it, you know? It's terrible. And I didn't want to stop drinking. But I went to this women's meeting. It was 6 o'clock on a Friday night. This was April 19th. And it was down these stairs, so I have my crutches and my rocket sock, and I'm, like, crying and scratching myself. And I'd been to the dermatologist. He's like, you have dry skin. I was like, no, I have fleas or some kind of thing. I was washing my sheets compulsively. So I sit down in this meeting, and I said, I don't think I belong here. My dad says I have self-centered thinking, and that you think that maybe I will belong. And I started bawling, you know. And I wasn't allowed to cry. Whenever I cried, I was like, stop crying. Stop it. I wasn't allowed to cry. So then I was beating myself up for crying. I mean, the self cycle was, I was in the absolute grips of the self-torture. And beating myself up for being like that, you know? So I was doomed. I went to the meeting, I sat there, you guys didn't ask me for anything. You didn't try to make me believe anything. The praying, I wasn't so into the praying. I was like, I am an atheist. I am sophisticated. I believe in the Big Bang. I stopped going to communion when I was a sophomore in high school because I learned about evolution, and thank you very much. So that was the only thing, was the praying part. I was like, oh. But you guys didn't make me pray, you know. So I called my half-sister, who's also sober, and I said, I don't think I'm an alcoholic, though. And she said, why don't you try some controlled drinking? She said that to me. You know, that's what it says in the book. Go out and try it. And I did that night. I said, okay, I'm going to go out tonight, and I'm not going to drink. And I started drinking water, and it was just classic. Like, 2 hours went by. I'll have one beer. And then some more time went by, and I was getting this guy that didn't really like to go buy me a case from the BP down the street. And I was on the roof with people. We were drinking on the roof, and I was saying, see, I don't think I'm an alcoholic. I went to this meeting today, but last night. And then I woke up the next morning, and I had people around me saying, no, my God, you're not an alcoholic. You're not an alcoholic. But something clicked. I was miserable enough that I was like, I really tried not to do that last night. I was like, I tried. I said, okay, well, maybe, I don't know. It sounds really dramatic to say I'm an alcoholic. You know, oh, I'm an alcoholic. You know, I'm 20. How can I be an alcoholic? You know, that's how I thought of it. But I came back to that women's meeting, and I came to other meetings, and they said, just keep coming back. And they gave me the book, and women swarmed around me and took me out for coffee. And you guys were laughing a lot. You know, you were always laughing. And I started to, and people said, compare the similarities. You know, don't compare the differences. Put a yet behind, oh, I haven't wrecked a car. Or I haven't, you know, been disowned by my family. Or I haven't, it's like, yet. This is a progressive illness. And you are on this path. And read this more about alcoholism. When I read We Agnostics, I cracked. It took nothing. I read it, and I was like, okay, God, okay, you know. I was in so much pain that my pride, it's like my pride was like, give it up. You can't survive if you keep relying on this, you know. I was like, oh, my God, it's beautiful, you know. I was like, and that's been, you know, my spiritual life doesn't look exactly like that today. You know, I definitely had the pink cloud thing. And I just, it clicked. You know, I was in enough pain, and the tools, when I saw the steps on the wall, I thought, oh my God, that's like directions, you know, it's directions. I was like, but I don't qualify to be here, so I don't get to use the directions. I'm like, the promises sound amazing. You know, the 9-step promises, wow, that's exactly what it is. You know, I need those things. How do I get those? And someone's, you know, they said to me, you know, the powerlessness over alcohol. I said, it's a liquid. How can I be powerless over a liquid? You know, I'm a human. I have a brain. You know, how it's in a bottle. You know what? And they said, well, is it unpredictable what's going to happen when you drink? I said, yes, for sure. It's definitely unpredictable because I can have all intentions of doing one thing, and then I wake up somewhere else, and I have had lots of different kinds of party things ingested into me. I said, yes, I can say that. And they said, well, can you say that just for today, it might help you if you don't drink? And I was like, well, yeah. If it means I get to, like, have a chance at these steps and get to keep coming around with you guys. I was so lonely. I was so lonely. And I was really afraid that I was not going to be able to dance anymore. Dancing was like a big thing for me, going out dancing. I don't even go dancing. I mean, I haven't, you know, my husband's like, let's go dancing. I'm like, I did that. I went to frat parties when I was in high school. You know, I'm like, I'm over all that dance. You know, I was like, always thought I was so like, anyway, that's, so I was afraid I wasn't going to be able to dance on the table anymore, you know, and be crazy and make people laugh. And people said, you can still dance on the table. You just are going to, like, remember, and you're going to deal with the consequences, you know, in a sober manner. Or you're going to have, people are going to confront you, and you're going to be sober dealing with those consequences. And I was like, okay. So I tried that, you know, and then I thought, oh, my God, my 21st birthday. I've been waiting my whole life for my 21st birthday. I went to jail for the ID, you know? And they said, when your 21st birthday comes or when your wedding comes and you have to have champagne, deal with it then, but one day at a time, you know, today. And somehow, you know, I was surrounded by these women in AA in Pittsburgh, and I went home for the summer in Cincinnati, and they got me into the steps. You know, I did my fourth step when I had like 90 days, and I learned that I got myself into a lot of these messes. Who knew, you know? I, you know, made decisions based on self, based on fear, that got me into, I had three boyfriends, you know? But what if, you know, I don't want to be a person who has three boyfriends who's lying to the other people and da-da-da-da-da. I thought I was such a victim. It's like, no, like, and that's where the higher power comes in. I need something else. I need a power that can provide for me what I have been trying to do for myself, you know, in a very manipulative, frightening, dangerous way, destructive way. You know, I had a sponsor who got me into service, you know, so I was shaking hands, I was making coffee, and I really liked it, and I felt like I belong here. These people accept me, and we laugh all the time. I was really afraid that I'd get sober and be boring, you know, but then there's this guy in Pittsburgh, we are not a glum lot. We absolutely insist on enjoying life, you know, I was like, that's awesome. So I think we had a convention called We Are Not a Glum Lot. I was really blessed as far as being around people who knew the program of action. I got to go see Bill and Joe and Charlie a couple times, and that was amazing. So my big book is, and this, you know, my original big book is, it has like a little sober and crazy sticker on it, and it's got like little triangle on it with a circle around it, and it's all got highlights and different sponsors, handwriting, and I just was blessed enough to be, you know, I couldn't escape. Like, the program descended upon this brain, you know, and because it was very clear nothing else was working, I was willing enough, and I'm really grateful. Because my husband, I've been married 5 years, and he's not an alcoholic, and he just can't believe, like, he'll hear me talk to friends, you know, about some of the stuff, or tell a story, and he just can't imagine it. And that, to me, is like, just, I'm like, well, I didn't do that. I didn't change myself. You know, the fact that I have no desire to drink today, I don't feel the compulsion. And I've been really blessed with that too. The compulsion lifted pretty early for me. At first there were, you know, I remember being in the shower, like right before my 21st birthday, and I was like, I just want champagne to come out of the nozzle, you know. And every time something like that happened, I thought, you're an alcoholic. One more point for alcoholic. You're an alcoholic. You know, too dramatic to say you're an alcoholic, or definitely alcoholic. You know, I was like, definitely alcoholic. It was like, it explained why I was so insane and so miserable. It explained it. It made sense. You know, my dad was thrilled. You know, he was very, very happy, and we got to go to meetings together, and he died in 06, and then my brother, who was mentally ill, he died in 07. And it's been a really intense couple of years. And that not being allowed to cry thing, like when I was growing up, it was like a thing my mom learned, and she was probably told that, and like, don't cry unless you're in physical pain, you know? And so so a lot of in a lot of my recovery, I've thought, oh, I'm an ice cube, you know, like I'll be with someone, they cry at a commercial. I was like, why can't I cry at a commercial, you know? Or I'm an actress, you know, these people who can just cry. I'm like, I can't do it. I'm like, I'll never be able to be on a soap. I can't do it. I can't cry. I can't. I mean, I can eventually cry, but I have to like work it up, you know? So that was something I had worried about. And then when I lost my dad and my brother, my heart just cracked open, and I would have been a puddle on the ground had I not had a lot of tools and known how to use outside help too, you know, for grief counseling, and I would have not been open to that. First of all, I wouldn't be alive if I didn't come to AA when I did, but just the, you know, something in my brain opened to, oh, there are tools. You are allowed to ask for help. There are lots of people who will help. Your experience is not unique. And, you know, in a way that someone else has felt the same things you have. Someone else has hated themselves like you have. Someone else has struggled getting sober like you have. Someone else has doubted their alcoholism like you have. Someone else has had the joy of, you know, sponsoring someone, you know, and like leaving after hanging out with a sponsee and just feeling like, oh my God, you know, it's just like amazing, you know, the sunlight of the spirit, you know, it's, you know, everyone has felt somebody, I'm not alone now. I was born with a brain that will forget that, and I am guaranteed that I will forget that. Thank you. And so I have to keep coming, and I have to keep coming. And luckily right now I'm willing to keep coming. I pray that I'm wake up tomorrow and I'm willing to keep coming and that nothing, that insanity doesn't set in. Yeah, I'm just very, very grateful to be here. Thank you for listening. Thanks.